everyone from Paul McCartney to Jimmy Page to the Queens of the Stone Age now relishes a chance to share a stage with Dave Grohl and his legendary Foo Fighters. The question is, why? Why? Is it musical depth? Not really. Major success? Well, yes, but they no longer shift albums in the same quantity they did 20 years ago, but the band can still fill stadiums around the world when Dave's not breaking his leg, of course. Long before Kurt Cobain blew his brains out, Dave Grohl was planning for a new life after Nirvana. The unflinching bright sunlight to Cobain's permanent midnight darkness, Grohl had come from a similar broken home to his erstwhile band leader, but came out of the experience differently, brimming with positivity and a shrewd grasp of opportunities in the music industry. With exclusive testimony from true insiders, including Kurt Novoselic, Grohl's bass playing partner in Nirvana, ex-girlfriends, record company executives, tour photographers and confidants, the book, which is of course Foo Fighters Learning to Fly, is an exploration of the real story behind Dave Grohl and the Foo Fighters. Delighted to be joining me once again from the UK, author of the book Foo Fighters Learning to Fly, Mick Wall. Mick, good afternoon. Dave Grohl, nicest man in rock. How does Foo Fighters get where they are today? Because you would have thought when, you know, Kurt Cobain had ended his life rather spectacularly in 94, that was it, game over for Grohl and Kurt, and well, definitely for Kurt, Dave and Chris.
Well, it was game over for Chris, effectively, but because Chris and Kurt had been together since the beginning. Chris was also 4 years older than Dave Grohl, and it was a profound and moment that couldn't be fixed. For Dave Grohl, he'd only been in Nirvana for less than 3 years. He was still in his early 20s. There was no way that that was going to be the end of his career. There was a long period of depression, but eventually he did the only thing he could do, and that was get back to playing music. He'd already been writing songs, some of which were destined, were supposed to end up on what would have been the next Nirvana album, albeit with Kurt's lyrics. So eventually, this 23-year-old guy just decided, well, you know, actually, my life isn't over. It's still ahead of me. I've got to do something, and it's going to be this.
And one of the things that perhaps surprised a lot of people, you know, with the Foo Fighters is the fact that, you know, Dave is a multi-instrumentalist, you know, plays a variety of instruments. When I first came across across the Nirvana, of course, he was just merely, you know, the drummer. And you know, with the greatest respect to drummers, then, you know, we don't normally think of them as playing anything else but drums. But Dave, of course, plays everything.
He really does. I mean, he was already making his own tapes, playing all the instruments before he joined Nirvana. The first Foo Fighters album famously has Dave playing every instrument, singing all the vocals, writing all the songs. But you're right. I mean, who'd have thought? In fact, one of the chapters in my book is called Grunge Ringo, which was one of the kind of unkindest things the critics had to say when they first found out that ex-Nirvana a drummer front's own band. But in fact, give the guy credit. You know, he's now had a 20-year career, dozens of hits all over the world. And the fact of the matter is that although that's where he came from, where he is now, he'll play Wembley Stadium, and the vast majority of the crowd won't even own a Nirvana record or wouldn't be able to name few more than two or three Nirvana songs.
And it's not only that, though. I mean, if you think of the Nirvana, who were dark. I mean, I remember seeing Nirvana on The Voice and going, what? Because, you know, up to that point, until Nirvana hit and, you know, the grunge wave took over, you know, the most dangerous band in rock and roll was Guns N' Roses. And Nirvana showed up, and they, you know, Guns N' Roses were sort of, you know, bourbon worrying to themselves, but Nirvana were dark and really scary. I mean, you know, we hadn't seen anything like it. So from that sort of darkness that was Nirvana, you would have thought that, you know, a Dave Grohl album would have made sort of a Killing Joke album look like Cliff Richard. However, you know, the first Foo Fighters. The thing with Foo Fighters is that they are bright. I mean, they're rocky, but they're bright, and they've got that great American songwriting sensibility.
Absolutely. I mean, it's in his nature. I mean, it would have been a huge mistake for him to try and out-Nirvana, because for that you need Kurt Cobain, and there was only one of him. Dave Grohl came from a similar broken home, but unlike Kurt, who came out of it as a permanently damaged individual who eventually got immensely messed up on drugs, Grohl came out the opposite. He came out extremely life-affirming. He stopped taking drugs in his teens. He is a huge Beatles fan. He's a huge fan of vocal harmonies. And as you can see from most of the pictures ever taken of him, the guy never stops smiling. I mean, having said that, as Grohl points out, just as John Lennon, his hero, once said of the Beatles, you don't get to be one of the biggest bands in the world by being a nice guy. And although Dave has this wonderful image and his music is incredibly uplifting, the fact of the matter is he's no dummy. You know, this isn't Goofy lucking out on the lottery. This is a shrewd, intelligent guy who will make the tough decisions when he feels he has to. He's fired band members. He's reprimanded band members. He even walked out on the Foo Fighters in 2002 to join Queens of the Stone Age, more or less to teach the rest of them a lesson. So this guy's tough. He's tough. He's cool and he's smart and he's funny. But there's a you know, a rod of iron in there as well.
I mean, this is the thing, is it? Dave Grohl, nicest guy in rock. I mean, that's his thing. But, you know, I mean, yes, as you said, you don't get, you know, where you are without being, you know, tough and determined. And yet, as you said before, he's sort of stood by the drummer, of course, who had almost died on him, and it stood by his hotel bed, and then basically said, right, well, if you don't get your together, you're out, kiddo.
That's exactly what happened. Taylor Hawkins nearly died of a heroin overdose in London back in 2001. Dave sat by his hospital bed for several days. He was in a coma. At one point, they thought he was a goner. Then it was he'll come out of it, but he'll be in a permanent vegetative state. As it turned out, he recovered. It took him a long time to recover, but he did recover. But at that point, Grohl really did decide to teach him a lesson, if you like. He walked out on his own band. He left Taylor Hawkins fuming because Taylor was trying to challenge him for equal say in the band. And that's the one thing the Foo Fighters have never had. They may be called the Foo Fighters, but there's only one real fighter in the Foos, and that's Dave Grohl.
The other thing about Dave Grohl is he's got this fantastic knowledge of music. You mentioned he's a huge Beatles fan, but it reflects. I mean, if you've been lucky enough to see, which I presume you have, you know, films like Sound City, you know, that he knows where he's coming from. He knows the history of the music, of the line that he's continuing.
He really does. I mean, to the extent now that through movies like Sound City and also the Sonic Highways project from last year, where he went to different cities and played with artists, you know, known to that area, this is a guy who's almost become the keeper of the flame in terms of leading the current generation back to where all this stuff came from. Because in this day of the internet and social media, where we feel we have access to everything, the one thing that becomes most prized of all is authenticity. And Grohl provides a great bridge through his knowledge, through his expertise in terms of these documentary films he makes, and of course his music, to say to his young fans, listen, I know you like me, that's cool, but look past me, let's go back, let's check out the Beatles, let's check out Chuck Berry, let's check out Johnny Cash, let's check out the Beach Boys. It's all there. You've got a lifetime of goodies to explore if you just cast your vision beyond the horizon.
And this is probably why, you know, musicians want to work with him as well. I mean, he gets everybody guesting with him, from, as we said, from Paul McCartney to... I tell you, one thing that blew me away was Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails in Sound City, where he's playing this beautiful... There's three of them, and they're playing this beautiful piece that just builds and builds and builds. And you do think, you know, that the other musicians recognise Grohl as, you know, as a serious musician as well, with some serious musical chops.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you don't become the drummer in Nirvana. Nirvana had five drummers before they eventually settled on Dave. And the reason they settled on him was, A, he simply is a brilliant drummer, but B, empathy. I mean, he and Kurt Cobain roomed together for months and months before Nirvana became famous and could afford to live separately. You know, Dave Grohl, you don't get to live with Kurt Cobain if you don't know what you're talking about when it comes to esoteric music, when it comes to finding strange textures that lie so far off the radar most people don't know they exist. So Dave can do that has done that and is famous for it. But at the same time, you bring in Paul McCartney, those two are going to have a good time as well, because Dave loves nothing more than a verse, chorus, chorus, pop, gigantic hit. And he's the man to help you play it if that's what you want to do.
And also, he's been able to write those. I mean, this is the reason he's filling out stadiums, because he does write, they do, you know, he does write incredibly catchy songs, and they do have great lyrics, and they've got, as you said, verse, chorus, chorus, verse, and they fill out stadium. I mean, you know, Foo Fighters, I mean, they're playing Barcelona over here on the 17th of November. They've packed out Milton Keynes. You know, he's been going on tour with a broken leg sitting in his Game of Thrones chair over the summer. I mean, he couldn't make Glastonbury, but, you know, he's been doing some really great stuff this year.
He has, and I think that's a real testimony to the man's talent. I mean, you know, you can make an album for £1.50 these days all on your own, but to go in and play before, you know, 100,000 people, 200,000 people, and actually make it seem like an intimate performance amongst friends, that takes a special kind of talent. That's almost God-given stuff. That's not much you can learn. It's just something you either have or you don't. And what's great about Dave is that he doesn't take it for granted. He goes out there and every single night he tries to make it the best gig he ever did, and that comes across, and people relate, they pick up on that energy and they give it back, and it really does become this tremendously feel good moment where everybody feels they're lucky to be there.
How difficult was it to get people to actually speak? Because, I mean, you speak to sort of tour photographers, ex-girlfriends. I mean, does everybody want to talk to about Dave Grohl? There's no sort of, oh, I'm not talking about that one. Or was it very easy to get people to actually go on record for the book?
It was and it wasn't. You know, those that were happy to talk had lots to say, and you almost couldn't shut them up. There were one or two that... you know, Dave has felt a little bit burned in the past by some of the books that have come out about him. He feels certain relationships were abused, and that he wasn't really invited in when the books were made. So he was very wary and asked certain people, you know, they wouldn't talk to me unless Dave said it was okay. And in the end, Dave is okay. Dave's thing really is only that, you know, he's such an outgoing person. He's done a million interviews. There is very little, you know, for him to tell you about the Nirvana days, which everybody keeps talking to him about. He's interested in now. He wants to talk about now and what he's doing today and what he's going to do tomorrow and what he's done in the recent past. And that's what makes him contemporary. That's what why the Foo Fighters still have such a young audience, because, you know, they're not like a Metallica or an Iron Maiden who still have a fantastic audience, but it's an aging audience. It's a classic album audience. The Foo Fighters are still relating to a young audience. They're still about right now, and they're still talking about tomorrow. And that's why when the book ends, it very pointedly ends on the fact that, you know, this is probably just volume one. You ain't seen nothing yet.
I mean, what do you think he's going to be doing next then? Can you see, you know, Dave Grohl, the Foo Fighters, the rock album, the rock opera? Can you see, you know, making a sort of a Monkees type film? I mean, what do you think, Dave? Because you never know with him, do you? I mean, you know, he's Sonic Highways has been fantastic as well, what he's done there. You can't really pigeonhole him saying, like, you know, he's going to go through his back catalogue again. You don't think he's going to knock out an acoustic album of his greatest hits. I mean, you really can't tell, can you, with Foo Fighters?
Well, he's kind of done all those things, and I think where he's going to go next will be right at the cutting edge of technology. There's a big Foo's announcement coming in the next few weeks, which, you know, I'd love to talk to you about, but that will be the end of any relationship I have
right.
with those people. But what I can tell you is that if you can imagine it, he's going to do it, because this guy doesn't just play every instrument, doesn't just sing and write all the songs, doesn't just produce the records and the live shows. He writes and directs his own movies, his own documentaries. And I think, you know, it wouldn't surprise me, put it this way, if we were about to see an enormous online project, episodic, interactive, lots to do with music, lots to do with exciting new stuff, to look at your phone, your tablet, and to be there in person. It's going to be way beyond what they've done before, but it's going to be something that will capture the imagination in a big way.
Ooh, sounds extremely tempting and mouthwatering for a Foo Fighters fan like myself. And have you had any sort of feedback from the great man himself about whether, you know, it's got the Dave mark of approval, the book so far?
Well, as you said, they're coming over very shortly, and I guess I'll find out then, because put it this way, if there was anything terrible and appalling and anything that, you know, truly he hated, I'd have heard by now. The thing about Dave is, unlike so many people I've written books on, you know, the book gives you good Dave, bad Dave, wonderful Dave, terrible Dave. It gives you real human Dave, warts and all, but also recognizing the talent and the achievements. And he's smart enough, because he's read books on the Beatles, he's read books on Elvis, he's read books on Led Zeppelin. He wants, if there's going to be a book, he wants there to be a book just like that about him. One which really tells it, pulls no favors, but at the end of the day gets it. And this book gets it. It gets Dave Grohl, it gets the Foos, but it doesn't let them off the hook. And I think that's, for him, that's what works.
Well, it's not only getting Dave Grohl, but I mean, I started reading it and absolutely got me from the opening at Reading, which is a superb opening paragraph and an opening section. It really is quite something, mate. The book.
Thank you, Charles.
No, honestly, I'm a big fan anyway, but I was just like, wow, yeah, totally. And it really sort of reels you in, and then you're off on a real rollercoaster. And the pictures are superb. Because if you grew up, as I did, sort of with that, you know, grunge, that progression from sort of big haired metal to grunge, and onwards, then it really is a sort of a blast back over 20 years now the Foos have been going. The book's called Foo Fighters Learning to Fly. It's published by Orion. It came out last month. Mick Wall, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. If people want to find out more information, I believe you're on social media.
you can go to my website, mickwall.com, and from there you can get the Facebook, the Twitter, the knobs and all business. But the website is mickwall.com.
Mick, and if we're going to close out with, and I could speak to you all day about it, but I'm going to have to shut my shop up quite soon. We're going to close out with a piece of music, which was interesting, because when David Letterman did his last show, which, and Letterman obviously is an icon in the States, he got very emotional about having the Foos playing live in his studio, because it was a song that meant a lot to him. Now, somebody as American as Letterman, you would have thought he would have gone for a Sinatra ballad or something, but it just proves how across boundaries, ages, whatever, taste, Dave Grohl has gone. This is Everlong. Mick Wall, author of Foo Fighters, plus loads of other stuff, Foo Fighters Learning to Fly. It's been a pleasure and a privilege, my friend, as always.
It's been great to talk to you too, Charles, as always. And you picked a real belter.
I thought so too. This is Everlong. Mick, have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Take care.